The following was originally broadcast on Northumberland 89.7 FM. For more podcasts and learn more about us, go to northumberland897.ca. And thank you for downloading this podcast.
Welcome to our program, Aging, a New Reality, a show that provides insight into many of the concerns that seniors have during their journey in later years. We talk to experts who will share their knowledge on subjects such as finances, nutrition, housing, and health.
Today, I have the privilege of interviewing Dr. Wendy Wolfman. Dr. Wolfman is at Mount Sinai Hospital and is considered a world-leading expert in mature women's health, and is addressing women's unique needs through the breakthrough research and quality care. She's the inaugural holder of the Chair in Mature Women's Health. This position will allow the chair holder to attract and mentor promising medical minds. Dr. Wolfman is also a professor in the Department of Obstetrics and Gynecology at the University of Toronto, director of the Menopause and Premature Ovarian Insufficiency Unit, president of the Canadian Menopause Society, and Education Committee member of the International Menopause Society. Welcome, Dr. Wolfman. I'm so happy to be able to interview you today on such an incredibly important topic when we know that our aging population, with boomers now at the age of 62 and younger boomers in their 50s, that your new position and your position as an expert, leading expert in women's health, in mature women's health, that this needs seems to be an urgently required program to deal with all of these aging women.
Thank you, Madeline.
I have a question for you. Why was this new chair in mature women's health established at Mount Sinai Hospital?
Well, actually, it's not so new. It's been around since 2015. It was really established based on previous work that I had done in mature women's health. And I had a grateful donor patient who was interested in the same area and saw many of her fellow CEOs, people that she knew, suffering from menopausal symptoms. And she felt this was a very important area. And so when I spoke to her about this area, she decided to make a donation towards a chair in mature women's health. And this is the first clinical chair called the Carol Mitchell Chair in menopause. And this has been available since 2015. And as mentioned, the chair stays in perpetuity at Mount Sinai Hospital, and interest from the chair funds fellowships, research, and improvements for women who are undergoing the menopause and after the menopause, mature women's health.
And why is women's health underrepresented in research?
Well, it's a great question. I think women's health in general has been underrepresented because initially any sort of manipulations of medications was of concern if women were pregnant, but we're not concerned about pregnancy as women age. So I think this has been a very neglected area that needs to be looked at, and maybe the recognition that women spend a third to a half of their lives after menopause needs to be championed. So I think that there is ongoing newer research that has recognized this issue that is so important for women.
And are women living much longer than previously? And so is the research concerning the aging woman of more importance because we are living longer?
Yes, absolutely. So the average Canadian woman lives into their mid-80s. And that is different, certainly from the turn of last century. when many women did not live beyond menopause. And so all these diseases of aging, as well as the symptoms of menopause, are more important. And also education takes longer. Women are delaying childbirth. So they are really reaching the peak of their productive lives right around the time when menopause occurs. And all these symptoms that can affect the woman's ability to function are very important at that time frame. So our goal is to ensure that every woman can function at her best level and remain and continue to provide the important leadership and care that women have always provided in our society. And that is our goal, to make sure that women function at their highest level.
That would be my goal too. Thank you, Dr. Wolfman.
Traditionally, women have been underrepresented in research. We know that. Does this relate to the risk of pregnancy? And so traditionally, many medications were not tested on younger women because pharmaceutical companies or trials were worried that the woman might be pregnant and therefore there would be effects of the fetus. And then the question goes to, well, why weren't older women looked at? Many of the cardiovascular trials weren't looked at. We know that heart disease presents differently in women than in men. I don't want to really say why. You know, do women don't count after they're not reproductive? I wonder about that sometimes. And I think that the attitude is changing. We are vital members of society. We need to function at our highest level. We are not only partners, we are also in the workplace, and we are the backbone of society. And if women don't function well, the whole family suffers.
I think you're right. And I think, too, as we see, and this is, you know, a slight aside, but we see that our as our population ages and people leave the workforce, no matter man or woman, we don't have enough people coming into the workforce in Canada. We have a declining group of work ready population. And when that happens, of course, it means that either we stay, older people have to stay in the workforce longer, which is a good thing if you're functioning well. So I think you're right. It was an empty door that wasn't being addressed, and people were falling through the cracks because there was no research that backed up any kind of treatment that would work.
It's not only that, though. It takes a very long time to develop the expertise and skills that allow you to function at a very high level. And so, for instance, many of the women that I see are CEOs or functioning at a very high level. It's taken them years to get to the position that they're at.
Yeah.
And then if they are affected severely, which 20% of the female population has severe vasomotor symptoms around the time of menopause, if that happens, then it's such a huge loss to society.
Exactly.
And I, you know, I met Carol, and basically she asked me what she could do with me. And this is what I told her. I said, you know, we really need to improve mature women's healthcare, because it's the last pillar of OBGYN that is not being addressed. And it's not just OBGYN. It's also other aspects of medicine.
Yes.
As OBGYNs, we concentrate on pregnancy. We concentrate on gynecological surgery, bladder issues. But many women now never get pregnant.
Yes.
And we are living such a large proportion of our life after menopause.
Yeah.
And this area is not being looked at.
No, you're absolutely right. Frustrating to say the least, that you're going to live such a long time after menopause that should be fulfilling as well. You know, you should feel well and not feel ill or non-functioning or less functioning than you were before.
There are things that we can't prevent, and that's aging.
This is something true.
You know, we all get older and our bodies deteriorate, but there is, I think, a period of time after menopause for a number of years that women can function at the highest level, similarly to the way they functioned before.
I agree with you. And I had, my mother was my mentor in this. She worked until she was 75, and she only stopped working because the business that she was in closed. Other than that, I think she would have worked till she died. You know, she just loved working, loved being with people, loved being a decision maker and having purpose every day in her life. That was such an important part of who she was. What are some of the most critical health issues or complaints that you see every day and that you are addressing with this position?
Well, I think the most common symptoms that women have around menopause most common symptoms that women have around menopause are hot flashes, night sweats, and then I think women are unaware that there are validated menopausal symptoms, and these include changes in mood, decreased sexual desire, sleep issues is a big one, and often the sleep problem and the mood change and the hot flashes, we talk about a triad that all go together.
Right.
But the other huge part that I see and is not talked about are the changes to the genitourinary symptom areas. And it's a big secret. And
yes.
No one talks about it. And I think this needs to be blown open. So for instance, all those tissues have receptors for estrogen as well as testosterone. And when those hormones decline, there are ramifications on the tissues in terms of the thickness of the vagina, the lubrication of the vagina, and there actually is a physical shrinkage of the introitus or the opening to the vagina. And this is a progressive problem. So whereas hot flashes typically last anywhere between 7 to 10 years, and 40% of women still have them into their 60s, and 10 to 15% of women still have them into their 70s, but the so-called genitourinary syndrome of menopause, which affects the bladder, the vagina, and the pelvic supports, is a progressive problem that never gets better unless it's treated.
And what kind of treatments do you use for women who are progressively getting worse?
So we have local estrogen treatments. These aren't systemic therapies. They're not going through the bloodstream. They're typically applied directly to the vagina or the vulva. We have mainly we've directed ourselves towards local estrogens, but we have a new product, for instance, that is looking at replacing part of the male aspect, which directs some of the other deeper tissues and also some of the nerve fibers, which also shrink after menopause. We also use in some situations, lubricants for lovemaking, moisturizers for maintenance, pelvic physiotherapy if intercourse is too difficult, and even to improve some of the bladder symptoms. Local estrogens also impact recurrent urinary tract infections, which is a huge problem for women as they get older and can be disabling. This is really underutilized. People are afraid to use it because of the so-called stain of hormones, which happened after the Women's Health Initiative, but we're talking about local therapies, which really provide very teeny tiny systemic levels of estrogen. These are extremely safe with no long-term effects. And so they can easily be prescribed. We have tablets, we have creams, we have a ring, and there is a soft gel tablet coming. We also have a new oral treatment, which is just on the market for this problem. I have very little experience with it, but I'm looking forward to using it as well. So there are a lot of advances in this area, and this needs to be blown open. Women don't know about it. They don't talk about it. It's a huge secret. We talk about everything else openly.
Yeah, but not that.
No one talks about this. They're ashamed. They think no one else has it. Yes. Everybody has it. 70% of women have it by the time they're 70.
Well, I think when you go into the grocery store or the pharmacy and you see row after row of incontinence products, you've got to think to yourself, something's going on. There's, you know, how could there be so much in product to use if women don't need this? And they obviously need it.
Yeah, we talk about the effects of all these aging things on society. And for instance, in Britain, they're much further ahead on menopausal issues than we are. They are looking at the effects of these symptoms on the workplace. And there is data showing that women who have significant menopausal symptoms have impact on their work productivity, their ability to function, and the workplace. And this costs in the US, it's been postulated billions of dollars related to menopausal symptoms. So this becomes actually a national issue, which should be addressed at the advocacy level. And there is, for instance, a new advocacy group which has formed to try and become more active politically for mature women.
Interesting.
And the Menopause Foundation, I think, of Canada is what it's called. These are two women CEOs who have just set up a foundation, a nonprofit, to try and provide advocacy for aging women. So I feel like after all these years, we're starting to move, and that's very rewarding.
Incredible, incredible. I'd not heard of that foundation. I will look that up and I will connect with them for sure, because I'm thinking in terms, as you say, this affects the entire country. It actually becomes an economic issue.
Correct.
And I think that may be the only approach, is to say this is a really economic, a serious economic issue. And, you know, it's something that we have to deal with across the board, not just, you know, in one tiny group of women who have access to you, which is.
So there is also something called femtech. And this is a huge area for future investment.
Femtech.
Yeah, like investing in feminine.
Yes. In fact, I saw that and I sent it to Bessie.
Right. And I read about it, and also we discussed it. We have actually, there are several societies that we have: a Canadian Menopause Society, there is a North American Menopause Society, and an International Menopause Society.
Wow.
These are medical societies.
Yes.
For physicians who are interested in the care of menopausal women. But all these societies do have lay information. There are YouTube videos on menopause that with validated information, scientific information.
Wow. So really, you've taken this from, you know, the very beginnings, and it's now exploding, and people are taking notice. This is phenomenal. I'm wondering if in part two, we can get into some more questions around the funding and the research that's being done. But right now, I'd like to thank you so much for part one. And I look forward to speaking with you again in part two of this incredible conversation we're having.
Okay, thank you.
Interviews in this series are conducted by Madeline Corelli, technical assistance by Trevor Joyce, production by Kevin Stewart, Olivia Waldroff, and Paige Johnston. Executive producer is Barry Walker. The preceding program has been a co-production of Northumberland 89.7 FM and the Community Training and Development Center.